It's a model to work with, I think, rather than a theory cast in stone. And I'm constantly revising it. But I think it works as a process on two levels. First, the immediate history of the Napoleonic period. You can tell where French institutions settle down and take root. And they do in some places and not in others. And then in the longer term, you know, you can see where the influence of French occupation, Napoleonic rule, has been stronger than in other places. If you sort of look at places that were annexed to France very early, like what is now Belgium, the left bank of the Rhine, they were getting revolutionary reforms long before even Napoleon came to power. You know, and they take root there. When the successor regimes come in 1814, they are very reticent, very cautious about repealing anything Napoleonic, anything French, because they've experienced it for so long. The same largely holds true across northern Italy. Another important facet, I would say, in the context of the times is the French always, because of the wars and the internal civil wars and the revolution, inherit very convulsed circumstances. And it's the extent to which that, say, the French gendarmerie as a policing institution can take root and function as it's meant to, that is, as local police forces, you know, rather than these kind of mobile strike force columns that just go out, terrorize the countryside and go back to barracks. When that happens, I think you're in the territory of the inner empire. These things are working, because if that works, then the courts work, then the administration works. And it's not even a question of the occupied peoples liking French rule. It's sometimes a question of them adapting to the French system to the point that they don't know anything else anymore, or accepting the system without liking the French. You know, and I think you can look at those territories, and if you look at the places where I would say that is indisputably the inner empire, the Low Countries, Western and Southern Germany, Northern Italy, that's the core of the original EEC, because that public sphere has been largely absorbed, accepted. Sometimes the ground's prepared for the French, sometimes the regimes that are there, like the states of Southern Germany, say, have already by and large thinking along the same lines of reform as Napoleon, so they can work in tandem, they don't, you know, rub up against each other. I think two just interesting caveats to it. In the period we're talking about, in the Napoleonic period, for example, this system works more efficiently and by and large is accepted more readily in, say, places outside France, like Belgium, the left bank of the Rhine, northern Italy, than it is in many parts of France. You know, the western departments, large swathes of the south, remain counter-revolutionary, opposed to the revolution, and find the revolution and its and Napoleon's reforms much less easy to accept than places outside France. It's not, the inner empire is not synonymous with France during its lifetime. The other interesting thing is almost contradicts this. I mean, this is why it's something to work with, not a theory. It's very interesting that, say, by the 1830s, the Spanish and the Portuguese who were never under Napoleonic control, you know, who kicked him out, resisted him, you know, were a beacon of resistance to him, Spain, which, of course, he never really properly controlled. They have adopted the essence of the Napoleonic system of government and the Napoleonic legal reforms by the 1830s. You know, and there's another caveat to it. But so in that sense, their public institutions are very French, very Napoleonic, even though they were never under Napoleonic control.